Today's episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Forcepoint. Forcepoint is protecting the government's most sensitive information. Global and national security depend on resilient, dependable cybersecurity. Forcepoint brings more than 20 years of expertise supporting the unique, complex missions and objectives undertaken by those who protect national security. From intelligence and defense to civilian agencies, these cyber warriors require rapid, accurate, and secure ways to support data-driven missions. Forcepoint's human-centric cybersecurity approach integrates best-in-class solutions with behavioral analytics, providing near real-time risk insights and automated remediation for better data protection, including controlled, unclassified information wherever it resides with fully scalable solutions. Find out more at forcepoint.com. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to support military veterans to thrive in their civilian career. Today's episode number 222 with George Randall.
But I can tell you the number one thing that I'm doing as a recruiter, as a recruiting leader, my hiring manager, and all of my executives are trying to do one thing and one thing only in an interview, and that is find reasons to say yes to you. It's your job to give it. Most people go in worried about what not to say. And I would tell you, with the speed of business, the things that I have to do daily, when I have an opening and I need to fill it, I'm hoping that the first two people give me every reason in the world to give them an offer for that job. It saves me time, I get the right person, and I move on. And so as you're preparing, remember, knowing about yourself, you're going into that interview to give them reasons to say yes to you. And if you can do that, you are ahead of 99% of the population.
Well, today's interview is an absolute goldmine of career advice for transitioning military veterans. George has spent his entire post-military career in the recruiting space and has some of the best answers about career transition I've had on the show. We talk about the two biggest mistakes that veterans make in their transition to a civilian career. We talk about how to break down your job in the military into a civilian context. We talk about the black hole in recruiting, where your resume will never be seen, and how to avoid it. We talk about the toughest question you will get in your interview and how to prepare. We talk about what to do after your interview, how to respond to a job offer, how to acclimate to a new job after your military service, and more. George and I will be doing a follow-up interview, so if you have any questions for George, please submit them at beyondtheuniform.io. Just use the Contact Us form or reply to this week's newsletter. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, in the show notes, you'll find links to everything we discuss and over 220 other episodes just like this one, as well as information about our new coaching program where you can get one-on-one subsidized coaching from career and executive coaches. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with George. Well, my guest today joining me in Austin, Texas, is George Randall. George, thanks for joining us on Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me.
I wanted to give listeners a quick background on George. He is the Senior Director of Global Talent Acquisition at Forcepoint, which is the human-centric cybersecurity company that understands behavior and adapts security responses and enforcement to risk. He started out in the Army, where he enlisted in 1984 and was commissioned via the ROTC. He served in the Army for 21 years, with over 11 of those on active duty. Since his military service, he has worked in the recruiting space at companies including Bearing Point, Booz Allen Hamilton, Hewlett-Packard, and Millennium Management. And so maybe to start things off, George, because you've got so much experience in the recruiting space, I'm curious if you've seen any trends with military candidates in the way that they approach recruiting, or maybe mistakes that they make.
Well, you know, that almost gets to be an exhaustive list. But if I were to tell you a couple things that I've noticed, and I've been working with vets since I got into recruiting, basically, I got into recruiting because it was so hard for me to transition and go to a company that I wanted. So I turned around and thought I could help vets out. Some of the trends that I think are notable is, number one, starting your search too late. With the age of the internet, you know, been going on for quite a while now, the ability to get connected, to find other military members who've transitioned successfully into an area or a function or an industry that interests a veteran. It's helpful if you start connecting very early, build a profile on LinkedIn and reaching out to people and starting to learn, you know, once you have an inkling of an idea that you want to transition. Second of all, and, you know, I've counseled thousands of vets about this, most veterans have done some kind of operations order. And in the operations order, there's this paragraph 3 alpha, the commander's intent, defining what success looks like. And I would tell you, it doesn't matter whether it's an E3 or an O7, writing down a veteran's intent or what they really want to do when they get out, like waving a magic wand and writing it down as a paragraph, is something that they don't do. They just get into the search hoping to find a job. And from that, from not having a clear idea of what they want to do, then it's hard to discriminate about where they could be most successful.
That's great. I mean, I love the I love that sense of proactiveness that I get from that second point of not just saying, okay, what's available, but really being intentional of this is what, you know, I like that you said, you know, if I can wave a magic wand. So not even saying this is what you're going to get, but like, what does an ideal look like? What does success look like for me? And I think that that's a great way to, I guess, approach that transition proactively and with clear insight on what you want out of it.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, that's the first question. I do an awful lot of mentorship and coaching. People have found me on LinkedIn, through contacts, through friends, through family, through other veterans I've coached. And I've talked to a lot of them. I said, you know, for some veterans, the next best step may be going back to school. It may not be transitioning into, you know, corporate America. It may be, you know, going back to school, going to a technical school, going to a coding school, to beef up any skills or to build the skills to get you where you want to go. It's not necessarily transitioning right into corporate America, although, you know, plenty of people do that. It's important to take time and look at the many options that you have as a veteran. Because unlike the military, now is the one time that control truly switches hands. You don't have a department of the Army. You don't have a department of the Navy. You don't have any personnel department saying, okay, this is where you're ETSing to next. This is where you're going to next. This is the name of the unit. This is the country. This is the city. You don't have that. It's now all your choice. So it absolutely has to be intentional. You have to sit down, give it some thought, say, this is what I want to do. Do I have what's necessary to transition? Do I know anybody in that space? Do I know anybody that's transitioned? If you approach it intentionally, the job search actually becomes about 75% easier.
What about, because I love both of these, starting the search early and really defining what success looks like. And then I wonder for listeners who are on active duty, like, how do they figure out what they do want to do? Like, I think back to myself in on submarines, it's like, I don't think I had a clear picture of what job options were out there. And that's, you know, major intention behind this show. But I'm wondering, what advice do you have for people about starting to figure out what they won't want to do and starting to figure out what they will want to do?
Yeah, it's a really tough and daunting task. Because for veterans, there's so much out here that they don't even know about. You don't know what you don't know. One of the ways that I approached it is I started breaking down all the different jobs that I had as an enlisted soldier, as an officer, and I was trying to look for common themes. What was it about it? Each one of these roles that interests me, what did I like? What did I hate doing? And so that led me to knowing that I wanted to be in management, in leadership, in logistics, in security, or IT. It started kind of narrowing the focus by looking at all the things I had done in the military and saying, okay, picking different pieces and different locations, different duty stations, and saying, yeah, I like this, I like this, didn't like this. And it started to kind of narrow it down as to, you know, what I might like to do. And from there, actually, somebody gave me a really great tip. And what I did was went and got the Fortune 500 list. And there's actually a Fortune 1000 list. And I started looking just simply at marquee companies, things that would, you know, jump out at me, the GE or the Lockheed Martin, Walmart, Apple. I mean, there's, you can just run across a spectrum of big marquee companies that everybody knows about. And I just started looking down the different jobs on their career site and saying, okay, that's interesting, that's interesting, that's interesting. Then I would see job titles and I would say, okay, that seems interesting to me. Is there one of these companies in my geographic location? And it just step by step found my way to an industry that I liked in a location that I liked. But I do want to share with people and kind of pop some people's bubble. And it's one of the first things I do. Is you're never going to get your ideal job out of the military. It's just not going to happen because there's too much that you don't know. Ideally, when you do figure out those things that you like that lead you down the path of an ideal job, once you get that, that's a foundational piece. Because just like when you get in the military and you see all these new things that you didn't know about, corporate America is much the same way. You're going to get into it and join a company like ours, like ForcePoint, and you'll be in recruiting and then realize talent management or compensation or human resources or behavioral analytics or IT coding. You'll get to see all of those things out there that now you can start building towards. So a little long-winded answer to a question.
No, I think that's great. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't thought of that before, but I love what you did with breaking down your jobs in the military, figuring out the common trends. I know that we have a coaching program with Beyond the Uniform, and that's one of the things that they do is figuring out values and what you enjoyed in the past. And there's things called flow, like things where you're really in the zone and what are the common elements that put you in that. So I think that was incredible that you came to that on your own. And then the thought of breaking down the Fortune 100 list, you know, seeing which companies jump out is also a great exercise I hadn't heard of before. But I hope, you know, I think the best thing you said there was about that for listeners to realize you're not going to get your ideal job out of the military. And I hope that listeners take that positively in the sense of like it bleeds off some of the pressure. You know, there are many, many lily pads between you and your ideal career. And it's not like you need to figure it out on day one. You just need to take the first step and you figure out, do you like that industry? Do you like that functional role? Do you like that size of company? Do you like that geography? If not, you can switch it pretty easily and you can start closing doors and opening others, and you don't have to nail it on that initial job search. And so hopefully that removes some of the pressure from what can be a very overwhelming process and transition.
Yeah, when you look out at the, if you were to just go to Indeed and they get something like a billion hits a month, the millions of jobs that they have globally, it is overwhelming. And you're not going to get your ideal job. And I would tell you, I'm a prime example of that. To go from being field artillery and combat military police to I'm leading global recruiting. There's no logic in that one. However, when I look at it, that I got into management consulting and then moved over into HR, it was about leadership. It was about selecting good leaders. It was about selecting talent, building talent. So it actually was a natural progression into something that I absolutely love and now thrive in. And I made quite a career out of it, actually, being in recruiting. But if I look back on my days in the military, under no circumstances would I have ever figured out that I would be a recruiter, a recruiting manager, a global head of recruiting. So once you're out in the industry, it's just like the world's opened up to you and you have choice. And it's equally one of the most exciting things, but it's also one of the most frightening things when you don't know what's out there. But what's important is you get to make the decisions about where you take your career, and it's based on performance.
I love that. I'm thinking back to back in college, my brother and my friend and I would go to Las Vegas for a weekend, and we would only eat one meal a day. We'd go to the buffet right before it upgraded the price to dinner pricing. We'd go in for the lunch price, and we would eat for like 3 hours just once a day. But it, you know, that was the image I had, in the sense of like, you would go out and your first couple of rounds, you would sample everything. You'd get a taste for everything. And then you'd start to double down on the things that you liked. And so, you know, when you were saying that, I was thinking like, yeah, you get a chance to taste lots of different aspects and then go deeper in the areas that really resonate with you. And I think that goes also back to your first point about not starting the search too late. It's so exciting right now to be able to have access to things like LinkedIn, where you can start to see, and okay, this is someone with my same background who went into cybersecurity. Does that, you know, let me talk to them. Does that interest me? Okay, now let me talk to someone who went into photography. You know, does that interest me? And that's a way to take smaller bites and get more information about, is this something I want to investigate further, or is it something I want to pass on for now?
You know, and I would tell you, you know, in recruiting, the number one way, every company across the globe, it has remained this way for decades. The number one way to get a job is employee referrals. And the reason that I mention that is, if you can find fellow veterans, they love reaching out and connecting with you on LinkedIn, and they're happy to tell you about how their transition went, or about their company, or to tell you the great things that they're doing or things to avoid. Veterans helping veterans is just, it's almost one of the, I would have to say it's probably the most untapped source. It's like people are afraid to reach out to a stranger or something. But any vet that reaches out to me, I connect right back with. And so you have this community that's already out in corporate America that's happy to share their experience and help a fellow vet make the transition successfully.
That's so true. And so maybe let's move slightly down the pipeline here. So let's say that they have found the job that they want to apply to, and maybe they found a veteran there who can help them go through that process. One of the steps in there is having a resume. And I'm curious if you have any tips on resumes, but also, because you're on the other side of this, I'd love to learn, you know, what do recruiters actually do with these resumes?
Well, first thing that people need to understand is that there are a lot of, especially in the United States, and I do global recruiting, but it's this way across the world, there are a lot of requirements on job postings that are driven by EEOC or OFCCP regulations that we have to, you know, adhere to and comply with. So the first thing that we're looking at is, does your resume fit about 80% of the job description? Now, that's if you're applying to a specific position. If you're giving it to another hiring manager, or you're giving it to somebody in a company and they're referring you, it's a little bit different, meaning the recruiter will go a little bit more deeper and start trying to find different roles across the company for you. They can circulate your resume. But if you apply to a certain position, then you need to meet about 80% of the basic requirements. So the recruiter is going to look, see if you meet it, and then they'll move forward. But if I could take a second, I do want to share something that most people don't know, and that's called the infamous black hole of recruiting systems. And this is really important, and this is kind of one of those tactical steps that every veteran needs to understand. There are tons of times where you send a resume in and you'll never hear back, and you're an ideal fit, or you're a partial fit. And people wonder why that happens. Well, this is the electronic age. If I post a job for a security manager, whether that's IT security or physical security, and I post that on a Monday morning, by Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, I'm going to have 75 applicants, easy, for a recruiter to go through. And so what a recruiter's going to do is look through those resumes that are submitted, and they're going to go as far down the list as they need to get 4 or 5 qualified candidates to put in front of that hiring manager. So if you happen to have applied on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday for a Monday posting, you may be so far down the list that the recruiter just doesn't get there. It's simply a math problem, and this applies to every company across the globe. So as you do a search, the technical tip that I give to everybody so your resume does get in front of people is, number one, is try to apply the same day as a posting or the second day. If it's been posted for 7 or more days, I wouldn't waste your time. And then number two, if you know somebody in the company, get the resume to them and apply to the position. That is the best way to get your resume reviewed more in depth.
And when you were saying the 80% of the resume needs to match the position, is that specific words and specific phrases within the resume, or what do you mean by that?
Well, it depends, but mostly it's the recruiter has to have a sense that from a basic qualifications or the basic responsibilities of that role that the applicant can perform the basics of that job without supervision. That if it says requires a high school degree, it requires a Microsoft certification, an HR certification, or you to know coding, or you to have a commercial driver's license, whatever those things are in there, you have to meet the absolute basics. It's good to have a lot of keywords in there, because a lot of times you have what's called sourcers, which support your recruiters, who will do database searches. They'll be looking through Indeed databases, their own databases, to look for keywords to pull up somebody that might be qualified or have those keywords. So keywords are important, but generally if you're applying to a position, if there's a basic list of qualifications, your resume has to clearly show that you meet those basic requirements.
And have you found any way to help veterans translate their resume in terms of just explaining what they did in the military and not relying on jargon or phrases or acronyms that the reader might not understand?
Well, it's a tough balance. And so there's a lot of schools of thought on this, and there's a lot of folks that help veterans that have different views. If you're applying to a company that has assigned or detailed veteran recruiters, then I don't think you have to civilianize your resume as much. And there are countless companies that do have specific veteran recruiters that you can get your resume to. Best way to find those people is, I think GI Jobs posts a top 100, top 200 military-friendly employer list, and their recruiters are listed right in there. They're easy to find. Separate from that, if it's a company that may or may not have a separate veteran recruiter, then I would try to do as much as you can in reducing acronyms. Every company has their own language. Each military branch has their own language, and it's helpful if you can get to kind of a universal point. One of the good things that people can do is make sure that they're including numbers where they can. I supervised, I managed, I led 5 people, 3 people, 4 people. I was responsible for $500,000 worth of equipment. I increased readiness by 25%. Those are things that a recruiter's going to look for. And the best tip that I give to people is, if you've gotten any kind of an evaluation, there are bullets of accomplishments on those evaluations that you can use in your resume. And they're already pretty civilianized if you take out a few of the acronyms to say, I achieved X, I achieved Y. Put those under any specific military job description so we can see, okay, this is what you were responsible for, and this is what you achieved in that position. One big mistake, or two big mistakes, is, one, to your point, you get too many acronyms and the positions don't translate very well. But number two, we get a lot of boilerplate resumes out of TAP and ACAP centers that are lines and lines and lines of what somebody was responsible for. But they don't tell us how they performed in that role. And that's a very distinguishing thing on a resume, when somebody shows that they have gone into a unit or a group and it looked like X and came out like Y, which was a distinct improvement and it was measurable. Drop the acronyms, add the accomplishments from your OERs, NCOERs, and evaluations, and, you know, show us achievements, show us what you've done. And it's not bragging about it, but just get it down there so we can see that you know, you were a contributing member and did some really great things, because when we see that, we know you're going to do the same things here.
That's great advice. It's that numbers point I think is so key too, because it's like I don't have to understand your background at all. When you say I was the number one of 30 junior officers, or when you say that you increased efficiency by 30% or reduced costs by 20%, those are things that are universally applicable and understood, and it really makes it easier to understand someone's value and what they bring to the table. And I love that thought of using those evaluations to be able to just do the heavy lifting for you and just pull those bullets and just make some small tweaks. And that's incredible stuff to use too.
Yeah, it's already there. And it's been my experience that TAP and ACAP centers tend to downplay those. And they rely too much on the keywords. But recruiters are human, and they want to see something that sticks out, that, you know, if you were the honor graduate, you know, we want to know. We absolutely want to know. That's something that you achieved and you should be proud of, and we'd like to see it.
Is there any recommended length for a resume that you would give to someone, or does that matter?
No, it doesn't matter. There's kind of some basics, about resumes, and I would tell you there are a million opinions on them. I can tell you one basic rule: never go over 2 pages, ever. Even if you've had 25 years, you can condense it down into 2 pages. Actually, on a resume, you really only need to go 10 years back. There are two kinds of resumes, and the one that I prefer is actually a combination. There's a chronological resume that shows, you know, here's my name and address, the heading, you know, here's my degree or my education or certifications, and then here's a list of the jobs and what I did. And then there's the functional resume, which is about what skills and competencies that you possess. And I like seeing those because that's where the keywords can sit. And then show me your chronological, maybe on page 2. There's tons of reference points out there. There's, I think, Army, you know, the green to gray books. Roger Cameron's PCS to Corporate America has a very, very good example. Actually, it's the number one interviewing book and resume book that I know of. It was designed for junior officers, but it's applicable across the spectrum. But there's some good examples in there. Don't get cutesy with them. Don't include your picture. And frankly, you don't even have to include your address nowadays, just your email address and a phone number. And that's good enough.
That's great. And I totally agree with the 2-page max. There's sometimes I see these books of 4 pages. I'm like, I don't need a novel on this person. Like, do the work for me. Like, tell me the most important stuff. Like, this is a skill that's valuable, is the ability to take a lot of information and distill it down into something usable. I think it's Amazon that has the corporate culture of like no memo can be more than one page, and it's like they're very, very strict on keeping things very brief because people don't have time to process. And so I like that. And for listeners, in the show notes for the episodes, I'll have links to Green to Gray and PCS to Corporate America as well. I'm wondering, you know, once the veteran, you know, maybe gets called in for an interview, what advice do you have for them about interviewing and preparing for the interview?
I would start preparing for your interviews when you start looking into your search 5 to 6 months out. I think it's the most important thing. Your resume just gets you in the door, but if you're called in, the number one thing that people just have difficulty doing is understanding what makes them great and articulating that. And there's so many people out there that give, you know, interviewing advice, and I would tell you so much of it is just absolutely horrible. So be very, very wary. That book, PCS to Corporate America, like I say, is a great book for anybody that's interested in learning the basics of interviewing. But what people need to do is start taking inventory of themselves. What makes them good? What makes them great? Why were they a great leader? Why were they a great soldier? Why were they a great sailor? What differentiates them? And know how to articulate that. And know how to articulate it and start practicing it succinctly. a lot of people make the mistake that they can just naturally talk about themselves and that it will come easy. And in high pressure situations, that's rarely the case. So if you don't practice, if you don't put the work in, you're not going to be your best, and you may or may not win the interview. And I've shared with a lot of veterans, I said, you know, especially the ones that have kids, I said, you know, when your kids come in front of you and the longer they talk, the more guilty you know they are. Have you ever experienced that situation? And they'll all say yes. I said, well, that's what an interview gone wrong looks like. When people haven't practiced, when they haven't locked down what the top five competencies or the top five achievements and able to articulate those. In the back of both of those books, there's a series of questions. And what I did is start writing them out and practicing my answers, just getting comfortable so that whatever question somebody threw at me, I knew myself well enough and I knew enough examples in my past to answer any question they gave me. And frankly, I just overworked people when it came to preparing because I didn't come from an Ivy League school. I didn't go to one of the military academies. You know, a lot of things. I had great evaluations, but, you know, no MBA. There were a lot of things that were kind of working against me, but I knew I could outwork people. And preparing for interviews, I outworked them. I knew myself and could articulate that very succinctly. And it really paid off. And I continue to hone those skills to this day.
I love that. I think that is such spot on advice. I just saw the movie. It's a documentary called Free Solo. It's incredible. It's about Alex Honnold, who is the first person in Yosemite to ever, without ropes, climb El Capitan, you know, the toughest mountain on Earth. And it talks about the years he spent preparing and literally going up with ropes and doing every single, like memorizing every single handhold, every single position. When I get here, this is exactly what I do. And just having that playbook. And that's what I picture when you were talking about the interview. It's not just throwing off the ropes and going up on the interview without any preparation. It's literally knowing exactly what you're going to say. And I forget the politician who had the famous quote of like, I went out to the reporters and said, does anyone have any questions for my answers? That's what I've always viewed with that is that, you know, in business school, we would do that. It was like, okay, what is your story of a time that you faced failure? Go. And you would rattle it off. You would knew exactly if someone asked you a question related to failure or mistakes or a dozen other things, you would tie it in to that compelling story. And so the thought of just going in cold and just going off the cuff, it's not courage. That's just it just seems like stupidity to go in unprepared. It's like somebody who's never flown a plane and being like, okay, I'm going to go now. Do this. It's just not wise.
It is, but you'd be amazed at how I see it both in the civilian world and in veteran circles and even preparing some things that they wouldn't expect. I was working with a group of senior officers, 04 and above, and they asked me what the toughest question was. I said, well, there's two tough questions for you guys. I said, one is tell me about yourself. I said, first of all, that's the most dangerous question out there. And the reason is it has no value. Meaning if you hammer that answer and do perfectly well, you're not getting the job. But if you do horribly, you may be ruled out. So there's nothing, you know, don't goof up and go too long on that question. But I said, the hardest question for senior officers to answer, and they were shocked, is tell me about your leadership style. Of all of the things that they would know about themselves, they didn't know how to articulate that one question. So I would tell everybody, prepare how, you know, questions about how you lead, how you've managed projects, you know, how you supervise, how you've taken a soldier, a sailor, an airman who was underperforming and improved their performance. You know, to your point, where was there a failure that you learned from? Know all those things about yourself. And then I wanted to add one thing and dispel one great myth. You know, when you're with a recruiter or hiring manager and you're interviewing, it's a very high pressure situation. And that's what you're putting on yourself. And most people, you'll read books. If somebody asks you this question, this is what they're really looking for. And they think there's some kind of ulterior motive to what we're doing. But I can tell you the number one thing that I'm doing as a recruiter, as a recruiting leader, my hiring manager, and all of my executives are trying to do one thing and one thing only in an interview. And that is find reasons to say yes to you. It's your job to give it. most people go in worried about what not to say. And I would tell you, with the speed of business, the things that I have to do daily, when I have an opening and I need to fill it, I'm hoping that the first two people give me every reason in the world to give them an offer for that job. It saves me time, I get the right person, and I move on. And so as you're preparing, remember, knowing about yourself, you're going into that interview to give them reasons to say yes to you. And if you can do that, you are ahead of 99% of the population.
That's exceptional. I haven't heard that before, but that's that makes me feel more relaxed hearing that. It's like, not because I think I would even still approach a resume or an interview as it's like an exam. Like, they're looking to for reasons to fail me. They're looking for reasons to ding me. And I love shifting that perspective and realizing, you know, this is one of 1,000 things this person has to do. So they really hope that you're going to knock this out of the park, because then it's one less thing they have to worry about.
I will tell you, I've had hiring managers, I've had, you know, some amazing candidates come in, and our recruiters do a good job of prepping them and telling them about personality styles or what's important to that particular manager for this particular role. And you get candidates that come in and they just hammer it, and the hiring manager goes, I'm done, I don't want to do any more interviews, this is the person I want. I'm like, wait a minute, what do you have for legal reasons, we need to continue with the interviews. But, you know, hiring managers have a full-time job. Whatever it is, whether it's at any firm here, it could be building, you know, the latest software that protects the Department of Defense. And they're on a timeline to deliver something, and they have tons of projects and are working long hours. So when they take time to interview, I promise you, they are looking for reasons to say yes. If you got in the door, they're wanting to know that you know yourself, that you fit, you can relate, and that you can impact immediately. And if you can just articulate that succinctly, you're way ahead, way ahead.
And let's say now, once the actually one quick question is, after the interview, do you recommend that the person send an email or a note or any sort of follow up afterwards? Is there any like standard etiquette these days in what to do right afterwards?
I think an email is always best, short and sweet. Appreciate your time, and then put, you know, some small anecdote from the interview or something that you liked, you know, that relates to that interviewer. I appreciate you taking the time. Enjoyed talking about the Kansas City Chiefs while I was in there. Well, it made the interview go great. I look forward to hearing about next steps, and that's it. Just a simple two-liner is sufficient. It does two things. Number one, it acknowledges, you know, that hiring manager's time, and number two, it conveys your interest. If you don't do it, then there's, you know, kind of a vacuum of information where somebody says, well, how interested are they in us? Because this works two ways, and people don't necessarily understand that. It's number one, we're interviewing you, but additionally, you're interviewing us, and we want to know that you're interested in us or had a good experience. So absolutely send a short note that just says, hey, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Learned a ton. And it convinced me more than ever that this is a firm I'd like to be a part of. I hope to hear from you soon. Something simple.
I love that. And I love that specific anecdote, so they know that it's not just a stock email, like just something unique to the conversation. And then what about, let's say that the veteran has gotten the job offer, and they're, well, actually, let me stop on that point. Do you have any thoughts on once they receive the offer, negotiation or just accepting that, or how to even approach receiving an offer?
Well, when I coach people, I go all the way back to that kind of intention statement of what defines success. That's when you need to be thinking about your worth, market value, compensation, and what you need. And I always think there are three numbers that you should have in your head before you apply or interview with anybody well in advance. Number one, the bottom number, which is, you know what, if this is just the ideal job and the ideal place and great people, you know, I will, whatever I can do to get in there, here's my bottom number that helps me meet my financial goals, you know, the things that I'm obligated to financially. This will allow me to live and grow and impact. Number two, the second number, probably the middle number, which is you know, hey, this is ideally what I'm gunning for. And then the top number is, hey, I don't care what they look like. If they offer me this kind of money, I'm going. You don't have to worry too much about that number, because if it comes to you, you know it right away. Where people get stressed is somebody offers them, let's say, $75,000, $100,000 for a particular role, and they start worrying, do I need to negotiate? Do I need to ask for more? Do I need to ask for this? Well, if you know what your numbers are, you may be able to accept right away, or you may be able to say, that doesn't work for me. And then when you go back, don't nickel and dime people. Don't nickel and dime. If you needed $80,000 for a particular role and they offered $65,000, but $75,000 would get it, say, something simple to the recruiter, say, you know, where I needed to be was $75,000. I'm willing to accept the job if we can get to that level. Do you think it's possible? And recruiters and hiring managers are going to do everything they can to get the right candidate, and they will come up absolutely as much as they can. So you may run up against some positions that have budgetary limitations and they're giving you their best offer out the gate. I do promise you that there are very few firms out there that are going to lowball you off the front. It just doesn't happen, because right now it's a candidate's market. And if we find the right candidate that can impact right away, generally companies will give a fair offer out the gate and be able to move a little bit north on occasion. And so it never hurts to ask. But if it's a number that comes out that's higher than what you wanted, accept the offer. And when you accept, don't take a long time to do it. If you know that's the number and that's the place you want to work, your first impression is not your first day on the job. Your first impression is actually when you accept that offer and how you accept it.
And what have you found? Is there any way to set realistic expectations, especially for that first job out of the military? I don't know if like sites like Glassdoor are relevant, but like how can someone listening get a sense of what's reasonable? Because what I've found is like I'll talk to people sometimes and they'll throw out a number that I don't know where they even got it from, but it's like, you know, hey, if you were going to from the military to a very near adjacent industry like government contracting, that may be appropriate, but you're talking about moving into a completely new role, new industry, new everything. That's just, it seems absurdly high. And so have you found any way for them to figure out what a reasonable number is or what to even expect?
I think Glassdoor is really helpful because you get a lot of people posting on there. So I think it's a good reference point. Connecting with people on LinkedIn and asking for their advice is also helpful. You know, there's a ton of Google searches. I would share with you that most of the time, a recruiter that you speak with is going to ask you what your expectations are, because the recruiter's going to know the left and right limits for that role, and be able to go back to the hiring manager and say, hey, we've got this great candidate here. I know your cap was 75. They need 80. Do you still want to see them? Some of the basic negotiation on the offer is going to happen with the recruiter, because we don't want to get to the end of the process for the candidate to have a bad experience with the hiring manager. The position pays 80, the candidate needs 100, and it was never going to work from Jump Street, so why did we do everything? So you are going to get some of that on the front end with the recruiter generally. And it's okay to talk with the recruiter and say, you know, if it doesn't come up, to say, can you give me an idea of what the target compensation for this role is? It's perfectly okay to ask. It doesn't rule you in or rule you out. It gives you a bit of actionable information to move on.
And then the, I know we're a little bit short on time here, but I'm just curious, once they've accepted the offer, do you have any thoughts on or advice about how a veteran can acclimate to the corporate world and to this very new business environment?
A couple things. Number one, I think the hardest thing for people that they need to get used to and get into their head is it's not just that you're not in the military anymore. It's that you're now in a company where you have a normal job. It's not around the clock. It's not 24/7, 365. It's not a full community. You're going to go there. You're going to work. You're going to socialize, but you're going to go home. So build the rest of your life, build your hobbies, go, you know, go play sports, go work with nonprofits, you know, have more time with your kids if you have kids, go coaching things. Build a life outside of your job, because now you have all the time and opportunity to do it. That's first and foremost. Fill the gap, because a lot of military people will come in and start working 12, 14 hour days thinking that that's what's expected to make a good impression. But I think it's like the military in most jobs. When you come into a new assignment, I think the first thing is just listen, ask a lot of questions, find out where you can make an impact, learn what everybody does, be humble, be curious, and be your best self. Don't try to push it too hard. Your acclimation, everybody's going to know where you came from. And most people are willing to help, because once you're in a firm, everybody wants you to be successful. So ask tons of questions, be curious. Everybody that you meet, find out what they do. How does it tie into this department? You know, how do these departments work together? Ask a lot of questions. Be open to what comes your way, learn as much as you can, you know, and then hammer home the requirements of your job while you're at your job. And when you're home for the weekends, you know, absolutely enjoy that life.
Well, this has been really exceptional. I feel like of everyone I've spoken, this is maybe the 226th interview. You've just got such a great wealth of knowledge about every step of the way. And I hope that listeners appreciate that every tidbit and every little nugget of gold that George is sharing right now comes from thousands of resumes that have looked at, tens of thousands, you know, and so many different people. So he's really distilled a lot down into this time. And I always like to keep the last question open-ended, and that is, what have we not covered today that you want to make sure that listeners know before we wrap up?
Wow. If I had to narrow that down, prepare. And then one interesting side note, and that is, a lot of people come out of the military, especially married couples, and they've made an agreement with their spouse that I want to go to a certain location. And I get that. I certainly do. I help a lot of people who are very location restricted. But remember, when you come to corporate America, that's like putting blinders on a horse. You're only going to see that little section of the world, and there's so much more out there. I would tell people to really think about living anywhere in the United States if you can find the role that interests you the most. And the reason I tell people that is, my wife at the time wanted to go right back near all of our in-laws. And she had a sister that lived there. And they saw each other only at holidays, and they were in the same town. But we were 500 miles away. And because I got to control my vacation time, I controlled my days off. You know, I have 30 days off a month or more. All the holidays, I was at every family event. I was at every wedding. I was at every occasion that I could possibly be at, went to see my hometown sports team, and I was 500 miles away. So with the age of the internet, with the ability to travel very easily and control your own time, you may want to get right back into your hometown. But I would tell you to pursue your career interests first, because that way, as you grow in your career, you'll be able to drive your location in the future when it really counts about you settling down.
This is great. Well, George, I appreciate your time and advice today. And for listeners, in the show notes, I'll have links to all the different resources we discussed and a link to George over on LinkedIn as well. He's been an incredible help to the military veteran community. And I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, it's a true honor. And if I can be of help, call me anytime. And good luck to everybody out there that's listening. And if I can help, let me know.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyonduniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you can continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.